listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. And it's Monday, so it's the start of the new week. It's also the day that we have Mark Collette from Great Britain stopping by, and that makes it an exciting Monday. Mr. Collette, how are you today?
I'm very good, thank you, Patrick, and thanks for such a kind introduction. I'm pleased I can bring some excitement to an otherwise dull and dreary Monday. And it certainly is that here today.
Excitement and Christmas cheer.
It's been a bad Monday, though, hasn't it? It's been a very black Monday.
Is it a black Monday?
It is. Have you not heard? The great Twitter purge has begun. We've already lost over in the States, American Renaissance and Jared Taylor have been purged. They were the first to go. And here in the UK, Paul Golding, Jada Franson, and all the official Britain First Twitter accounts have gone. And I hear that the English Defence League has also gone as well.
Wow. Well, they're not getting me.
Are you not on Twitter?
Not on Twitter, no.
Not on Twitter, no. Well, it's sort of I'm just searching now to see who's still left, because they've started off. Oh, also all of the Generation Identity and Identitarian Twitters have also been banned as well.
Now, I'm on Gab. I don't do anything with it, but I did sign up for it. Are you on Gab?
I am on Gab. I am, yes.
Now you're still on Twitter.
I am at this as time of speaking right now. I am here and I am still live. So,
which I mean, and I know you've got a following. And
yep, 25,000 followers.
So, you know, it would be a shame to lose those people, and it's not as if you could get all of them to follow you over to Gab or wherever's the next place. But do you think this is going to be really self-destructive for Twitter or not? I mean, I don't think Twitter really makes money, do they?
Well, that's the thing. I was talking to a few people about this, and this is one of the things you've got to note. These big social networks, and let's talk about three big ones. As social networks go, the big social network is Facebook, the big video sharing site is YouTube, and the big micro blogging site is Twitter. Now, all of those three platforms, I believe Facebook makes a profit, I know YouTube doesn't, and I believe Twitter has found it very difficult to break even. So they're all running at a huge loss. Well, two of them are. But by running at a loss, they're effectively ensuring that no one else can break into their market, because they're these huge entities. You know, they're running like monopolies, basically, their own little sector. Like Twitter is the monopoly on the microblogging. Facebook is the monopoly on the social network. And YouTube is obviously the monopoly on video sharing. And these companies, they run at a loss. And that more or less prices anyone else out of the market. Just on December the 15th, just 3 days ago, VidMe closed down. So that was one of their biggest competitors. That's gone forever. And it's very worrying, because what you're seeing here is the centralization of such huge amounts of power in the hands of a few mega corporations who don't have to abide by the same laws that a government would. You see, the government can't lock you up for free speech because you have your First Amendment, but these companies can deny you a platform, basically curtailing your free speech, and you have no real recourse against them. And my big worry with all of this is as these huge monopolistic corporations take more and more control, and we've spoken about this before, we will see that our free speech disappears. And sort of my challenge for the alt-right or for nationalists in 2018 is we need to learn from this. And that the easy answer to this is basically to set up our own social networks. Go to social networks like Minds.com, BitChute, or Gab, which is a free speech microblogging site, or go to VK, which is a free speech version of Facebook, which is based in Russia. And we can do all of those things. But I don't think that's enough. I think the big message for 2018 is we have to really get off the internet. We have to turn our movement into a real world movement, a movement that can't just be shut down by these companies, a movement that can't be interfered with by the big service providers, because that's another issue that potentially with the death of net neutrality, companies like Verizon and Comcast, mm-hmm. they can essentially choose what websites people look at. They can say, right, we don't provide bandwidth to these websites because they don't abide by our terms and conditions. They don't abide by our rules on hate speech. So
what's your position on net neutrality?
I think from my position, the internet is a public utility, and the large sort of providers are public utilities, and they need to be overseen by the government. Because if you put the internet into the hands of a private corporation, that is much, much easier to hijack than if it's in the hands of the government. And I do believe it needs regulation, because if these large corporations get a hold of it, I believe over time you will see multi-tiered plans bought in where they'll say, you used to pay $40 a month for your broadband, but now we'll sell you it piecemeal. So you get YouTube for $5 a month, Facebook for $3 a month, Twitter for $2 a month, and there's your basic package, $10 for your social networks, plus another $5 for all your mainstream news sites. So for $15, you can access all of that. But to access everything else, to access David Duke's site, to access my site, to access Gab, you have to pay a lot more, or they may even be banned altogether. And I think that's a really worrying trend. And
You are alarmed at the, or potentially alarmed at the potential of what could happen with the end of net neutrality.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that also.
I was too. I know there are differing views out there, but I share your view.
Well, I also see it as all part of this big crackdown against us online. There's this huge crackdown coming, and we're all facing this. And the big problem we're facing, Patrick, is it's all of these big corporations, and all of a sudden the government's got this lovely get out of jail free card. They can turn around and say, well, we've not stopped you from saying anything. Don't be mad at us. It's these corporations, and it's a free market and it's a free world and there's freedom of association. And unfortunately, that will be a major, major problem for us, because these major corporations, they're not owned by people we like, and they're not operating in our best interests. They're operating in their own interests. And the problem is the alt-right and nationalists or patriots or whatever you want to call us, we've built this magnificent movement, and we've built this alternative media. We've built an alternative media that can create things like Brexit, that can bring about the breakdown of absolutely huge globalist blocks like the EU. We've built this amazing alternative media, and it can get people like Donald Trump elected. It can get Marine and Marianne Marshall Le Pen coming second place in the French presidential election. All of a sudden, it can spread the truth on things like the rise of ISIS and what's going on in Syria. And all of a sudden, that's going to go. Now, never before in my life have I seen situations where normies, people who aren't really involved in politics, have come to me and says, I don't believe that Assad's a bad guy. I saw it on the BBC that he's the bad guy, but I don't believe it because I watched a documentary on YouTube, or I saw something that someone shared on Facebook. And that alternative news is scaring the hell out of the mainstream media. And I think all of this is part of a big crackdown to kill off the alternative media. And my message is clear, and this is something that if there are any people who are alt-light or just very wishy-washy conservatives who happen to be listening in, you people better watch yourselves. Because the first people to go might be people like Jared Taylor and Paul Golding and Jada Franson of Britain First. It might be American Renaissance. It might be the Identitarians. And you conservatives might sit out there and actually smile at that and think, ah, well, now they're gone. Us conservatives will be, you know, the biggest force. We'll be the ones who can really take the, you know, the fight to the leftists. But believe me, when we're gone, the next people they'll come for is the conservatives. Just like on Facebook, when they got rid of the racial nationalists, when they got rid of the alt-right, when they got rid of the identitarians, who did they come for next? It was pages supporting Donald Trump. You had pages like God Emperor Trump, which was sort of a satirical Trump-supporting meme page that had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of supporters. Pages like Disdain for Plebs, which were, again, a satirical site that was just there to sort of mock Snowflake and SJW culture. Both of those sites had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers. Both disappeared. And so once they get rid of
us... And tax cutters and free traders, free marketeers, they better watch out because they're next.
Yeah, definitely, of course. And they'll be very smug when we go because they'll say the only reason they haven't really won is because we taint the pond that we all swim in. And they'll say, you know, we're toxic and people like myself or you who talk about high level stuff, we're the ones that put off the normies. But in fact, we're not. We're the ones that have been red pilling the normies because these normies haven't been turning to the conservatives. They've turned to Brexit. They've turned to Trump because of the alternative media that we've been pushing. But when we're gone, the conservatives will be next. And that this Twitter purge, it's absolutely shocking. But it'll just turn places like Twitter into absolute stagnant and morally degenerate cesspits that are just echo chambers for people calling for the most debased and repulsive things. You will end up with a social network that's literally people calling for the normalization of absolute horrors, and they'll do so unopposed by anyone like us.
Well, I want to move to diversity, but how's this for a segue? So conservatives, are conservatives next, are they really viewed as a threat? The idea of having a balanced budget and free trade and less regulation, yeah, a balanced budget that might impinge the welfare state some, but is it going to make the street safe? Is it going to keep Somali gangs from roaming the streets of Columbus, or Muslim grooming gangs from Pakistan to rule Rotherham? Is it Rotherham?
That's the one.
Did Margaret Thatcher's version of economics, I mean, how much of a bulwark was that against the real problems that we're facing?
Well, Margaret Thatcher's economics were somewhere between understandable and absolutely disastrous. They were not good. They were not good. The problem is, Margaret Thatcher was in a very, very difficult position because on one hand, she was being pressured by essentially the unions, and the unions had been so infiltrated and so taken over by genuine communists, by people who were genuinely in the pay of the Soviet Union. Now, at the time, some of these people were actually, I can't remember his exact name. I'll have to look it up for next time I'm on the show, and I'll correct myself. He was actually one of the main unionists, and it's now irrefutably known that he was actually a Soviet spy. And these unions were bringing Britain to their knees. Now, unfortunately, Margaret Thatcher had to deal with that. And in dealing with that, she was extremely heavy-handed. Extremely heavy-handed. And the problem with that is she not only decimated the unions, but she decimated the industries too. So we lost our coal mining, we lost our steel works, we lost our iron works, we lost large portions of our manufacturing base. And once those economic changes came in, and once those big industries left, unfortunately, the communities that relied on them, the communities that were based around these industries, were shattered, absolutely destroyed. So places in South Yorkshire, where Rotherham is, places that relied on the mining, on the steel industries, they were just decimated, and those communities have never recovered. And that's part of the reason why there was no community response to the grooming gangs in Rotherham, because there isn't any community there anymore. Because when the industries went and men went on the dole and the communities died, the pubs closed, the working men's clubs closed, and essentially you saw the rise of, instead of a working class, but an underclass. That led to problems which we are still seeing the repercussions of to this day.
Mm-hmm. Well, your latest video is on multicultural Christmas, right? Christmas multiculturalism. What's the title of your latest video?
My latest title is Christmas Markets and Diversity Barriers.
Christmas Markets and Diversity Barriers. And so getting to diversity, getting to multiculturalism, this is nothing that you and Britain or we in America ever voted on. It's a top-down project. And increasingly, multiculturalism and diversity are replacing, at least in the American lexicon, they're taking the place that words like liberty or freedom used to have. Yes. These are the ultimate goals. These are the American values of diversity and multiculturalism. And, you know, in 1965, when the 1965 Immigration Act was passed, it was passed with the explicit guarantees that this wasn't going to change the ethnic makeup of the country. And then as years went on and it was apparent that it was, well, it doesn't matter because it's not going to change the culture of the country because all the new people will they'll assimilate. And they'll be culturally American, so it doesn't matter. And then, of course, in recent years, it's obvious that that's not happening. And one of the first signs I had that the paradigm was shifting was there's a comedian named Kamau Bell. He's this black man on CNN, and he was doing a show saying that he considers assimilation to be he called it a four-letter word. It's a dirty word that these people from other countries, they've got their cultures are thousands of years in the making. And you know, why should they give up some tried and true culture that they have to assimilate into ours? And of course, then the question is, well, then why didn't they stay in their tried and true culture? So that's been jettisoned. Now it's okay. We don't need to assimilate. Everybody can have their own culture. They will be happy. And of course, the next paradigm is going to be too bad, Goyim, too bad, white people. You're at the bottom of the. It's not okay for you, and you deserve it. And that's the direction we're going into. So there were people from the beginning who were not happy with the Immigration Act or the changes. There are other people who are willing to accept it as long as people assimilated. And then there are more people who are willing to accept non-assimilation as long as it's a happy, happy scenario for everybody, as long as it's, you know, food fairs and festivals. But of course, it's not. It's suicide bombings. It's affirmative action and discrimination and shut up. Anyway, that's my introduction. Why don't you tell us about the Christmas markets? Do you have them in Britain, or is this something that's more of a German or continental thing?
Well, it obviously started on the continent. The Christmas markets are German. They started on the continent. But they've come to Britain in a huge way. Sort of every major city in the UK now has one of these traveling Christmas markets. And basically, they are like these sort of faux sort of log cabins, which sort of house little stalls that sell crepes. They sell these giant sort of sausages, you know, German sausages that you get in a bun. They sell donuts. They sell a variety of different food and treats and mulled wine. There's usually beer stalls, and then there's stalls where you can buy little Christmas presents, and then there's some sort of traditional sort of fairground rides like a carousel. And basically, you're meant to go there with your family or with your girlfriend, and you're meant to go there for a nice evening or an afternoon out. You eat, you drink, you enjoy sort of the season of goodwill. And these Christmas markets have become a real part of Christmas. They've really taken off, and everyone sort of really likes them. I mean, I know when you go to the one in where I live in Leeds, it's hugely popular, and the amount of people queuing for stalls can sometimes be horrific. But obviously,
Are you hearing the break music yet?
I'm not.
I'm not either. It's usually our break time, but we might be going through the break, so please continue.
We might be carrying on. Well, what I was going to say was, these Christmas markets are usually sort of bustling, sort of centres of Christmas cheer. Everyone seems to love them. They've become a major feature of Christmas. Now, obviously, last year you saw a number of terrorist attacks at these markets. Most notably, one in Berlin, where a lorry was either hired or hijacked by a Muslim, and it was driven into one of these Christmas markets, killing 12 people and injuring another 50-odd people. So it was quite sort of a horrific act. And ever since then, everyone's been on lockdown, and these Christmas markets have gone from being places of Christmas cheer to being places that are surrounded by a ring of steel, surrounded by metal detectors, gates, places where they're encircled by concrete barricades, they look more or less like, you know, guarded by military checkpoints. And you regularly see armed officers, not just officers with sidearms or handguns, but officers with assault rifles and submachine guns patrolling these markets to keep the peace. And this is a sign of changing times. This is a sign of a political system that's failed. It's a sign of multiculturalism collapsing in on itself. It's a sign that we aren't living together, there isn't integration, that there isn't some peaceful utopia just around the corner. If anything, this society is pulling itself to pieces. It's moving in so many opposite directions, it cannot survive because it isn't a cohesive body.
So when, for instance, the Industrial Revolution happened, and you had these new industries, and a lot of the working conditions weren't safe. A lot of people died. Later on, you had, you know, other innovations, other, like the transportation revolution. You had cars, and we have cars, and every year in America, I think it's at least 20,000, 30,000 people die in auto accidents. But we accept it as the price for progress, that we get so much more out of industry and we get so much more out of transportation that we're willing to accept that cost. With the statements made by Mayor, what is his name, Khan of Sadiq Khan, is that his name, in London?
Yes, that's the one, Sadiq Khan, a Muslim mayor.
He seems to indicate that these attacks at Christmas markets would be the type of thing that we should just accept for the value of multiculturalism. It's a price that we should be happy to pay. Do you think that's the message that we're getting?
I think it's a very confused message, and I think you summed it up quite well, actually, initially, in saying that originally we were sold this idea of integration. Originally, it was all about people coming to the UK or coming to Europe or America, or should we just say the Western world, and when they got here, they were going to, over time, assimilate, become just like us, fit in, and we wouldn't even notice them. And there was only going to be small numbers anyway, so they would probably be interbred, and they would just absorb themselves into our culture, and at best, you know, really the biggest disruption to our life was, you know, going to be seeing, you know, shops selling, you know, maybe Chinese or, you know, Indian takeaways. And that was going to be quite good because, you know, they weren't going to change our lives, but they were probably going to bring a bit of new cuisine here. And, you know, we'd have a sort of wider range of takeaways, and that was going to be about it. But that's not really how it's played out. And the big problem is now it's nothing to do with integration. Nothing. They've abandoned that. That's basically gone down the memory hole. They don't even talk of integration anymore. Now they talk of diversity, which is the opposite to integration. Because originally, integration meant, when in Rome, it meant these people would adopt our ways, they'd become like us, they'd speak English, they'd act like us, and, you know, they may still sell, you know, onion bargees to us on a weekend when we go out for a meal, but in all other intents and purposes, they'd be just the same as us. But now it's nothing to do with that. They're not going to be like us. It's diversity. In fact, integration would be bad. Diversity is our strength. The fact that you can walk into school playgrounds and hear 30 different languages being spoken, or you can travel to different cities and not even recognize they're in the UK because the ethnic makeup has totally changed and these people haven't adapted in any way to our culture, that's apparently our greatest strength. Mm-hmm. So that's the first very confusing thing, because they've totally changed their tack on this. And even the UN now is not calling it just migration or immigration. They're calling it replacement migration, and being very open that the goal is to replace the European people. So again, they've changed their mind on integration, and now they've moved to diversity, and they've also changed their mind on the issue of numbers, because originally it was just going to be a small amount. It was going to be people who were coming here to fill essential roles, but now it's replacement migration. So it's gone from a small amount to us being literally replaced in the lands of our forefathers. So they're two huge changes. Now, the other lie that we constantly hear is how it grows the economy, how it makes life better, how it brings money, how it, and all of that's just a load of just rubbish. I mean, in the UK, Muslims, who are one of the biggest immigrant groups, they are 80% of the adults, 80% of the adults of working age are not in full-time employment, so are claiming some kind of benefit. So that's only one in five Muslims of working age in the UK have a full-time job. So there you have it. These people aren't making the economy better. They're not bringing in huge amounts of money. They've not come here and brought with them huge amounts of inward investment. They're not beavering away, inventing new things and creating some economic miracle. In fact, they are largely speaking a burden on the welfare state. And it's not just Muslims, though. We have a problem with health tourism, where millions of people from all over the world who need healthcare try and get to the UK because they can walk into any hospital and get immediate treatment. We have all of these problems. Immigration is not a financial benefit to the UK. It's a financial negative to the UK, a huge one. So, as I said, it's not integration, it's now diversity. But diversity, as we know, is quite literally blowing up in our faces, and it's not bringing any financial benefit. And it's got to the point now where not only are we saying to people, well, actually, yeah, you know, we are being replaced and the government's admitting that, but when you actually ever try and pin any of these leftists or liberals down to what they actually think, literally their only response now is, well, what are you going to eat on a Saturday night when you go for a takeaway? That is literally their response, because there isn't any other response they can give. You know, we haven't seen any economic miracle. We haven't seen any tangible benefits. All we have in recompense for the destruction of our people and huge, huge taxes to support these migrants coming in is a range of different takeaways, which to me isn't exactly a fair deal. That's not to say I don't enjoy some of that food, but if somebody said to me, would you trade a secure future for your race and your nation for a chicken korma? Unfortunately, no, I wouldn't.
No. So your former prime minister, David Cameron, made some statement, and you can clarify the statement, but something to the effect that Britons have more to learn from Muslims than the other way around. And, you know, as I was talking about this progression of paradigms, so right now we're at diversity. Is diversity the end game, or is it actually integration, but us integrating to them, us assimilating to them? You know, or when we say to them, I don't necessarily mean to Muslims, but to some future culture that gets developed and imposed on us that is alien. It may not be a traditional Muslim culture or traditional Hispanic culture, but something imposed on us that's completely alien. We are coming up on our break, so let's think about that and be back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
And welcome back to the show. You're back. That was the smooth sounds of Filbert Apple Bag. And I left a question hanging in the air about David Cameron, his suggestion that maybe it's the British that should become more like the Muslims. What's your response to that?
Well, my response, thankfully we've had a break so I can do some Googling, because I, unfortunately, I'm not actually the fountain of all knowledge. But I'll read this from the Daily Mail. And this was an article on the 6th of November. It was originally published on the 6th of November, 2014. David Cameron says he wants to see Britain's first Asian prime minister in his lifetime, as he warns that a lack of diversity is holding the country back. And, you know, he was saying here, the Prime Minister warned Britain is not achieving its full potential. This is a direct quote from the article, by the way, because it's because prejudicial barriers still remain against ethnic minorities. There was a glaring absence of diversity amongst figures at the top of life in public. And basically, this is the this is exactly the kind of nonsense and sort of really you know, to sum it up perfectly, the kind of crap you hear from these politicians. Now, I, in my latest video, go and check it out. Everyone, please go to my YouTube channel. You can find it, Mark Collett, which is spelled C-O-L-L-E-T-T. Go and give me a sub if you can and watch my video on diversity in Christmas markets. Now, I drew a small analogy during this video. I said, you know, if a man took a mouthful of poison from a little bottle and he went to the doctors and he said, oh, I drank some poison from this bottle and it made me feel awfully sick. You would expect the doctor to say, right, sir, we need to get your stomach pumped, or we need to administer an antidote, or, you know, you need to drink an awful lot of water and flush that out of your system. But what would surprise you and shock you and possibly horrify you is if the doctors crowded around the bed of this man and one doctor steps forward and said, oh, the reason you're feeling sick, sir, isn't because you had a small amount of the poison. It's because you haven't drank enough of the poison. And then proceeded to try and force more of that poison down his throat. That would be almost a scenario from some kind of psychological horror film where a man enters a nightmarish world where everyone's out to get him. But essentially, that's what's happening with modern-day politics. Multiculturalism is a poison to homogenous Western societies. In fact, multiculturalism is a poison wherever it's been initiated and tried. It's failed everywhere. It's failed in Africa. It's failed in India and Pakistan. It's failed in the Philippines. It's failed in Eastern Europe. It failed in Northern Ireland. It doesn't work. It simply doesn't create healthy societies. So essentially, bearing all this in mind, for the people pushing this, who can see it going disastrously wrong, who can see all the problems it brings, to tell us that actually it's not working because we haven't had enough of it, that is just incredibly, well, it's Orwellian, it's incredibly, you know, well, it's just insane, isn't it? I'm trying to think of a better word, but insane would sum it up perfectly, because they're saying we haven't had enough yet. That's why things aren't working. Things are getting worse. Not because of diversity, but because we haven't had enough diversity. And all of this nonsense is exactly what's destroying us. But people nod along to it. They nod along to it, and they act like it's some kind of, you know, supreme wisdom. Like it's, oh, yeah, well, that's what it must be. You know, these barriers at the Christmas markets, the barriers at the Christmas markets are because we haven't had enough diversity. If things were more diverse, there'd be less barriers. No, that's not how it works. The reason there are barriers is because of diversity. And the more diverse Britain becomes, the more you will see troops on the street. And the very interesting thing about troops on the street is toward the end of the history of the Soviet bloc before it all collapsed, the Western leaders would say things like military checkpoints, troops on the street, people disappearing in the night. They're all signs that the Soviet bloc isn't working. They're signs that it's going to collapse. They're signs that they're coming to the end of a regime. The regime is coming to an end. Well, these very same signs are now things you see in the West. They're signs that multiculturalism is collapsing, that it isn't working, that it's coming to an end. And it's not coming to a peaceful end. It's edging ever closer to a gruesome end, an end where we're seeing whites being ethnically cleansed from areas, forced out of their own areas. We're seeing white people all over Europe in the countries that are heavily multicultural being forced out. We're seeing no-go zones. We're seeing areas where young girls can't walk the street alone, where if a young girl was to walk through on a summer's day in a dress, she wouldn't get out the other side safely. And the way that the politically correct commissars wish to deal with these problems is by either covering them up, that's the first option, covering them up, or actively changing outcomes to make it look like society is more peaceful. And you're thinking to yourself, what do you mean by changing outcomes? Well, I'll give you an exact example. Theresa May, our current Prime Minister, she commissioned a report by a black member of parliament called David Lammy, and he wants to change the outcome of how people get tried for crimes, or how people get sentenced for crimes, should I say. That's more accurate, how people get sentenced. And what David Lammy has actually suggested, and please look this up, please take the time to Google it, because this is going to sound so insane that I was actually telling someone about this the other day, and at first they didn't believe me. They had to sort of, I had to say it twice, and they were like, are you sure? And it is de facto the truth. David Lammy has suggested that basically, if a black man is found guilty of a crime and a white man is found guilty of exactly the same crime, so it's all things being equal, the only difference is their ethnicity, the black man should be spared jail, because that is what needs to be done to even up crime statistics. They need to not jail the black man, so when they give the crime statistics out, they can say fewer black people are now in jail, because black people are disproportionately found guilty of these crimes and sent to jail. So at the moment, the prison population in the UK is disproportionately black. So what they're going to do is not tackle the problem of criminality, but simply not jail offenders from the African community, so that they can then smile and say, we have reduced the number of blacks in prison.
Yeah. If you want American examples of this, you can go to Colin Flaherty's YouTube channel. He has a YouTube video from the past day or two. He puts about three a day, but from the past day or two, and he's talking about the numbuzz. So look at for that video, the numbuzz. And he explains a lot of the things that similar things they're doing here. The public school systems, they won't, in order to keep down statistics on detention or suspensions, they just stop suspending black kids for bad behavior. Now, what you have is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you've had dozens of teachers quit because they. And these are elementary school teachers, because they're being attacked by their students and there's nothing they can do about it. You have police departments in places like Baltimore or Houston that just say, well, we can't arrest our way out of this problem. So they stop arresting people. They stop patrolling neighborhoods. And it's just a massive disaster. But, you know, this is the direction that we're moving in. So what's the end game here? It gets a little bit frustrating, and I know we both tend to be on the optimistic side. There are plenty of pessimistic people who say, "Well, you know, it's Armageddon, it's warfare." But I've had you on the show before, and you would talk about very sensible policies that could be enacted if people were willing to enact them, not ruthless policies, not kicking down doors in the night, but policies changing the welfare systems, for instance, which not just favor minorities, but they also encourage people to come. You just on this show, you talked about tourism, medical tourism. There's just so many reasons for people to want to come, and our rulers are predominantly Jewish ruling classes who want these people to come and want to replace the populations. They make it so that it's so attractive for people to come. There are policies that that can happen. And you don't think it's too late, do you?
No, of course it's not too late. It's never too late. The thing that annoys me with the sort of naysayers and the sort of doom mongers who are like, oh, we can't do anything now. It's just a matter of time of waiting for the collapse. Well, that's the biggest load of crap I've ever heard in my life. And I'll tell you, 95% plus of the sort of doom mongers who are like, it's too late, we shouldn't, you know, we can't do anything. They're only saying it's too late because they want to absolve themselves from doing something. They're actually lazy. And I've met loads of these people. People who tell me they don't want to come out and leaflet or attend a conference or meet people or get involved in community politics because they're waiting for the big collapse. And when it comes, they'll be on the streets at my side. Well, that's a load of crap because the people who say this to me, they're not training, they're not preparing themselves. They're just sat at home playing Call of Duty and, you know, eating potato chips and watching, you know, comic book movies like The Avengers. So that's just rubbish. Of course we can overcome this. The fact is, we created the greatest civilization known to man. Do you think we're really just going to go into the night quietly, that we're just going to disappear, that we're going to go down without a fight? Of course we're not. You know, look at what our ancestors have achieved, and our people have been taken to the brink more than once. We were taken to the brink when the Muslims invaded Europe before, at the siege of Vienna. We were taken to the brink at Thermopylae, at the Hot Gates, where the 300 Spartans stopped or withheld the Persian invasion of Europe long enough for the Greek states to rally and realize what was going on so they could drive the Persians back. There have been many, many examples throughout history of a small number of Europeans changing the whole destiny of the world through their bravery and through their actions. And things can change very quickly. There's absolutely no way we are just going to disappear. And anyone who's saying that we are and they shouldn't do anything, they're either trying to demoralize us because they're a bad egg, or they're lazy and don't want to actually get involved in saving us. So I always have faith. I always have faith, because you just got to look at what our ancestors overcame. Now, yes, the attacks on us have been sinister. They have been insidious. They have been designed to weaken us, designed to make us less than what we were. They emasculate our men. They turn our women into horrible, materialistic, self-serving, individualistic slobs who don't want to raise children and have families. This further demoralizes our men. But the fact is, these attacks have only been taking place on our people for probably less than 100 years. Now, we have another 40,000 years of European history and genetic breeding, basically what lies within our DNA. And that isn't going to be overcome in 100 years of brainwashing. We can turn this around. And there's always hope. Just look at Poland. Look at Hungary. Look at the Czech Republic. Look at the movements that are taking place in those countries. Look at the healthiness of the people. Look at that gigantic nationalist event in Poland just the other month, where they turned the sky red with the flames from their flares. It was incredible. And that just shows there are people ready and willing to fight. Yes, there will have to be sacrifices. And yes, we may see some once beautiful nations like Sweden or even the UK fall before we see the great revival. But there will be a great revival and we will be part of it. But the important thing to make sure that we survive, and to make sure you, your family and your friends survive, is we have to rebuild our communities. And the important thing to remember is, when we did overcome those great odds in the past, like at the Siege of Vienna or at Thermopylae, it was down to men of European descent standing together, standing shield to shield and building a wall, standing as a community. Nothing can be won if we think of ourselves as individuals. We have to think of ourselves as a collective that is bound together by tradition, heritage, and culture. And that's what we have to embrace. It's just a matter of going back to basics, rediscovering our roots and fighting for something greater, thinking about more than just materialism and individualism and hedonism, thinking about something better. And that sounds, to some people, will sound a bit dark. People will be like, oh, I don't like the idea of getting rid of materialism. I like all my, You know, I like watching TV and going shopping and doing all of these things. But I guarantee to all these people, finding love, raising a family and being around those you love and actually doing meaningful things like that will fulfill you in a way that is better, greater and deeper than any materialism or any hedonism. Because that's what we've been naturally bred to do. People say to me, Mark, what's the meaning of life? You know, and I say, well, I'm always positive because I understand the meaning of life. The meaning of life is life itself. We were put on this planet to survive as long as we can so we can procreate as many times as we can. Because ultimately, what makes us happy is life. It's birthing new life and raising it up in a good and joyous and righteous way in our own image. It's bringing children into the world. It's ensuring the passing on of our genes. It's ensuring a future for our bloodline. And if people follow that, if people follow that basic meaning of life, they will find happiness and they will ensure a future for their people. And that's right. Good.
Yeah. And it's not as if shopping is going to go away or television or other forms of entertainment are going to go away. It's a matter of what's going to be a priority in your life. And right now our priorities are warped, that the materialism is the top priority, and our own families, I mean, people aren't making families. So the priorities have become backwards.
No, of course. Everyone's prioritizing the wrong things. But that's not...
And we will be right back after the break.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of $30, $40, $50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Show. That's my, is that our Hanukkah song there? It is Hanukkah. All right. So are we optimistic? I mean, I know you do podcasts basically every day, and you've written your books, you do these videos, and of course you work full time and you work out at the gym. You find this time, I guess, because you're not wasting a lot of time in computer games and consumerism. And we don't really have much of a professional cadre of people who can devote themselves full time to this. The way you look at all of these sources of Jewish power, the academia, the journalists, their various so-called nonprofit organizations, they have billions of dollars to pay people to work full time, pump out their propaganda and their nonsense, and yet we seem to be starting to carry the day. Are you optimistic?
I am optimistic. And
guarded optimistic? Guardedly optimistic?
No, I'm very optimistic. I'm very optimistic, okay, of course. I'm very optimistic because that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. People say, how have you got the energy to do all these things? Well, it's because I'm motivated by this burning desire to, you know, help save our people, to make a change, to do something magnificent. You know, I have this burning desire to do these things. And I think that's the wonderful thing about our movement. And this might be a bit of a white pill for people. It might be a bit of a morale booster. Our enemies, they have huge, huge resources they can draw upon. They have professionals, they have these giant tech companies, they have solicitors, they have the internationalists, they have the bankers, they have all of these people paying into them, helping them employ people, helping them raise funds, making sure they've got the best legal advice, they've got the best infrastructure, they've got everything going in their favor to help them win. Yet we, this ragtag bunch of basically idealists, people who want to change the world for the better, we're getting the better of these people, and we're doing it in our spare time. We're changing the political narrative. We're pushing the culture war back and making ground. And we're doing it part-time. We're doing it around our full-time jobs. We're doing it around feeding the kids. We're doing it around going to the gym. We're doing it out of our own pockets. We're self-funding it. We don't have massive tech companies like Google and Apple. We don't have huge high street chains like Tesco's, M&S and Debenhams supporting us. We're doing it on a shoestring, and we're still winning.
Mm-hmm.
That says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's because our enemies, they need the acquiescence and even cooperation people that they're trying to replace and eliminate. And that's a tall order. That's not easy to do. What they're trying to do is not something that's easy. And it requires people being tricked, fooled, brainwashed. And it's much easier to reverse I think it's much easier to blow the lid off of brainwashing than to actually brainwash.
Well, hopefully you're right. I can hear the end of the show coming in as well, Patrick. So I just want to say before I go, thank you for having me on as a guest. As it's unlikely we'll have a Christmas Day show, I just want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to both yourself and all the listeners.
Well, thank you very much. And we look forward to speaking to you again in 2018, which is going to be a big, big year for us. I guarantee it.
Excellent. Well, I'll speak to you then, Patrick.
Okay. And we will be back again tomorrow for another exciting episode of National People Radio.